back. 3 hours of sightings coming your way next. Once more, a great program coming your way tonight. So sit back and open your ears, open your mind. In 2 hours, we're going to be going live to the grain fields of southern England, where this year's crop circles are coming down almost on a daily basis now. We'll get the very latest from one of the world's foremost authorities in that remarkable phenomenon, Mr. Michael Glickman. But first up, a return visit with Joseph Gill, a scholar in the field of ancient symbolism, which plays such a big part in our world culture today. Next, right here on Sightings. Let's get underway tonight. Big program for you. Joseph Gill has spent years studying ancient culture and symbolism, and in doing so has amassed one of the world's largest and certainly most eclectic private libraries, all housed at his spectacular estate on the Big Island of Hawaii. Since this subject is pretty much of never-ending interest, I invited Joseph back to continue our dialogue on the issues of symbols and how they profoundly populate our cultural landscape, pretty much functioning not only as icons of our daily lives, but also as often recognized and unrecognized touchstones of our religious, political, and human heritage. Joseph Gill, are you there from Hawaii?
Yes, I am, and thank you for having me back.
You're welcome. It's been about 6 weeks, and I know the last time you were here.
June 1st, and I certainly got a terrific reaction from your listeners. I got a lot of letters and email, and thank you very much.
Tell us about some of those letters. What came of that? Just give us a little bit of a view.
Well, they were all very friendly letters. There was no irate letters, and there were a lot of queries about further literature that they could go to get more information. And basically all I do here is to give a teasing or an introduction to what they can find out there very easily.
Yeah, we've done many programs on symbols and symbolism, and those programs always fascinate the audience. Why is it that we can, at this point, sort of bumble through life surrounded by these incredible ties to our ancient and not so ancient past and not recognize them for what they are? It's amazing.
Well, it's such a part of our life that we don't think about it. Do you think about the air when you walk through it?
Oh, I do all the time.
It's just, but yeah, if you live in certain areas of the country, you see it as you walk through it.
Yes.
But even at that point, it begins to blend into the background.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these symbols, even modern symbols, really are lost in our own surroundings.
Some would say that's part of the big plan that we're not to notice.
Well, and the fact is that the symbols are such a part of our life that when you point them out as being symbols, people think that you've lost your your mind.
Gone cuckoo, yep.
Yeah.
What are you staring at those dollar bills for? And so what if there's a pyramid on the back? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, that's one of them, but I'll give you another one that will surprise your audience, and they'll immediately discredit me. But that is when you go into anybody's house, you go up there and you go into your house in the evening, you're just arriving home, and what do you do? The first thing when you arrive into a room,
turn on the light.
Reach in on the wall, and you what?
Throw the switch up. Well, that's after stepping on the dog.
Yeah, after stepping on the dog, you reach inside the door and you flip a switch up and you turn a light on. Now, on is the old name for sun. And when you turn that little switch up, that's the symbol of the phallus. And that is in all of the electronic engineers, all of the people that come around and wire your houses, they know that when the switch is up, it's on. And it's as simple as that.
So,
just have to think about that. It sounds crazy, but it's true. And
Freud,
we have these symbols all around us incorporated into our culture and to such a degree that we don't even think about it.
So it would be strange to have the light switch really thrown down to turn it on, clearly.
That would be wrong. The only way that would happen is if you have two switches on the same circuit. and then you go to the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
And turn it back. But if you have a single switch on a single circuit with a light bulb, you turn it on, and when men get turned on, the switch goes up.
So what you're saying is it's the direction that's significant here, not the switch configuration.
Yeah, it's the phallus going up, and it's the phallic acknowledgement of the sun.
And that goes
last time we talked about sun symbolism, and I had mentioned that how I'd gone through hundreds of books, many of them on the sun, and had never had a satisfactory answer as to the real origin of sun worship, and also the cross, the origin of the cross, and where it came from, until one day when I went to the beach and I was looking up at the sun, and it's best to look at the sun either in the morning or in the latter part of the afternoon, not when it's straight up, and you can look right at the sun, and you can see a perfect cross going right over it.
Well, we're not recommending this now, so it's just Joseph's personal experience.
Sure. Well, you can do what you want. It's our own temple. But I look at the sun regularly, and if you look at it on a dry day, it'll have four equal arms. If you look at it where there's humidity in the air, the humidity hangs at the ground, so the longer arm is at the bottom. And so it's a perfect Latin cross. Now, around the cross, very often I will see a halo or a rainbow going all the way around, like many people see at night around the moon. And that is, in my opinion, is the origin of the symbol of the zodiac, where you see on a lot of church spires, you see the cross going up and the circle going around it. And later on, that was given names of 12 different animals called a zodiac. And that's basically nighttime navigation.
Is this going back to
navigation by the stars?
Right. Is this, Joseph, the idea of looking at the sun, seeing the cross, is this going back all the way back, as far back as
Well, I don't know how you can get any further back than the sun, because before the sun, I don't know what happened, and I don't think anybody else does.
With respect to, with respect to human history, though, this is, you can trace this in your mind all the way back.
Most definitely. I mean, sun worship is the only thing that comes in tie with that is phallic worship. And that's worship of rocks. Very often when you travel around India, you'll see a tree with a couple of rocks by it. And those are renditions of the phallus and the tree of life. But another thing that I found in my studies that I've never read anywhere else is the origin of the tree of life. And the Jewish people, they call it the Kabbalah, or the tree of light, or the talking tree. But it wasn't until I started reading Gray's Anatomy, and I found there was an illustration on page 1159 that showed a little baby laying on its back inside of its mother's womb. And the umbilical cord came straight up, and out came the, looks like an oak tree, it's the placenta. There's no connection with the mother other than through the liquids that are inside the womb and through the placenta. That is the tree of our life. And without that tree of life, we wouldn't exist. So if you go back and look at nature, either on the sun or the tree of life or some of the other things that I'll be pointing out, you'll find that it's unquestionably the source, because you can't get any further back than the umbilical cord and the placenta in our own life. In ancient cultures, it was a custom to eat the placenta after the baby was born. And of course, that's repulsive to most people out there, but it does recapture a lot of the lost energy.
Well, interestingly enough, there are actually books on how to prepare that very thing for consumption. And you can find those books in some health food stores. I've seen them.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So it's still practiced on a small scale, at least in this country.
I had also mentioned last time about the story of the Emperor Constantine in 325 A.D. He had taken 1,100 bishops up to the town of Nicaea on the coast of the Black Sea.
Kind of an early Bilderberger meeting.
Right, right. And he had some 1,100 bishops, half of which represented the followers of Hesos, which were the worshippers in Great Britain. And they worshipped sort of a offshoot of Horus. And half of these bishops came from the east, and they were the worshippers of Christos. And Christos is the Indian god from about 2000 B.C. And he said to them, he said, look, you know, the Roman Empire is falling apart. We're having a lot of trouble. And the only way we can really unify that is to produce a single religion. You people are arguing back and forth, and you know very well that you're both worshiping the sun. Because both Hesus came from Horus, and Horus means sun, and Christos means sun. So we unified them together, meaning sun, sun. And
as in Hesus Christos.
Right, and before 325 A.D., you will find many references to Jesus, many references to Christ. Now, Hesus goes into Esos, and the eye turns into a fish hook. And the fisherman is Jesus, and that is the name for the sun. Now, my name is Joseph Gill. Joseph means sun, and Gill means sun. And the ancient agrarian cultures, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names for the sun. Names for the morning sun, the midday sun, the evening sun, sons of the different seasons.
Not to mention sons of the desert. Be right back with Joseph Gill here in just a couple of minutes at Sightings Tonight. I'm Jeff Rentz. Happy you're here tonight. Lots to come. Here we go, and a great pleasure to have Joseph Gill on the program tonight, coming to us live and direct from the Big Island of Hawaii. He is a scholar in the field of our symbolic heritage, and we're talking about symbols, and pretty amazing when you look at it. It becomes rather simple. Now, jumping directly to the key question here, in your research, do you side with some who would suggest that Jesus Christ was a creation, a folk creation, or do you believe the man really existed?
Well, there's no question that he did not exist. It's just a matter of researching it and finding out. There are literally dozens and dozens and dozens of saviors of God. There are dozens and dozens of people that were saviors of God, that saviors of man, rather, that were born under a star. With three wise men came from the east. Their mother's name was Mary. Buddha's mother's name was, or rather, Krishna's mother's name was Mary. Buddha's father's was a carpenter. There are parallels down to the sentence.
And okay, that
does not a matter of chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of education. And when you join a church, and I used to be an acolyte in a cathedral in the Northeast United States. I was the fellow that carried the cross up to the altar at Christmas time, and you know, I understood this, the whole ambiance of the church. But basically, when you get into any religion, they discourage you from studying other religions, and they say it's of the devil. Say, for instance, when the conquistadors went to the New World, they found that there were more crosses in Central America than there were in Europe. So they said that that was of the devil, but what was really happening was Quetzalcoatl was also the son of God, and he was born to save the people in that part of the world. And they saw him in the sun, and therefore the cross was there. Now, Quetzalcoatl is pictured with dozens of crosses all over his robe. They had crosses all over the streets. And of course they destroyed them right away because the priest did not want to see the parallels. The priests do understand this.
Okay, now.
I have personal testimony from a number of people that have been to seminary where they've actually been told the esoteric meaning of the Bible and of these different mythological origins, and they've had to take an oath that they would only give the exoteric, which was the meaning for the people. I have personal testimonies from numbers of people, but that is totally unnecessary.
All right, let me take you back now to the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Essenes and the Gnostics and all the rest. the Dead Sea Scrolls and Gnostic writings exist from virtually the time of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Were they deluded? What's the story?
Well, it is real interesting how Israel refused for over 40 years to release the Dead Sea Scroll documents. And
right.
The only reason why the Dead Sea documents were ever released was because of the Huntington Library there in Los Angeles, who had a full set of all of the documents in photograph, and they released them. And immediately the government of Israel sued the Huntington Library.
It was an outrage.
That.
Yeah, it was very, very hot stuff flowing back and forth there for a bit.
Yeah, so they claimed copyright. So I don't know how you can claim copyright on an ancient document like that.
And claim anything you want in court these days.
Well, if it came from the possession of God, it's probably a property of the people.
And all right, now what you're saying, though, excuse me, what you're saying about Jesus not existing, does that not necessarily lose
well,
a lot of
did
people?
Exist.
Okay, all right,
Jesus
let's get this real clear.
Jesus did exist as a sun god.
All right,
called
but did
Hethos,
he did he exist?
Hethos.
Did he exist at the time the Bible says he did, or were the Gnostics out of their minds, or is it not possible that all the above can be true? There was a man
well, there was a,
who went
there
by
was
the
a,
name.
A great magician called Apollinus of Tyana, who many quote scholars will refer to him as actually having the life of Jesus. But the truth of the matter is that if you follow Krishna, who lived 2,000 years, now just remember, we're about ready to hit the year 2000, right? Okay, so the difference between the year 2000, which comes up in a couple of years, and the time of Christ is the difference between the time of Christ's supposed birth and the time of Krishna's birth.
All right.
I mean, we're talking about a lot of days gone by.
Mm-hmm.
So the story of Krishna is exactly the same as the story of Christ, right? So the fact that they were both crucified on crosses, they both had mothers that were named Mary, they were both born in a cave, they both had the ruler, the local ruler, killed all of the young boys, and they escaped. And it's not just Krishna, it's repeated again and again and again. And let me just, I've got over 200 books on this particular subject. And the best book that I can pick out is called Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions. And it's by T. W. Dionne. And
is that T as in Tom or P as in Paul?
T as in Tom.
All right,
T.W. Dionne. And all you have to do is go into any good bookstore and ask for the book called Bible Myths by T.W. Dionne. There's another one that you could get confused with, but not with the author.
All right, coming up on a break right now. But many people would tune out as soon as they hear that. I would ask them to stay on, just listen, and we're going to take calls in a half an hour. Could it not be, though, Joseph, that there was a man named Jesus Christ who lived when they say he did? It just happens that all the circumstances you are citing are also correct.
I don't think so. No, I'm not going to be politically correct. I'm not going to say what people out there want me to say. Basically, the book that I'm talking about is just a reflection of several other hundred books that I've got in my library.
Okay.
And it's obvious once you've done the amount of study on it.
All right. Hold on. We'll be right back and take your calls coming up shortly here at Sightings Tonight with Joseph Gill. Be right back. We are back with Joseph Gill, a scholar, a tremendous library he has to consult on. It may not have all the books that many of you listening think should be in his library, and then again, they may be there. But what about the Roman records of the execution of Jesus? What about the personal letters of Pontius Pilate regarding his crucifixion and so forth? Was this all made up, too, in your opinion?
Well, all you have to do is look at the sky, and you see the cross. And you see the cross that the sun is dying on, the sun that is put there by God.
Mm-hmm. I understand all that. That, Joseph, that is not a problem. But the question I have is...
Well, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But basically, after this, this is a story that's been told and retold and retold and retold. And Jesus, the story of Jesus, mm-hmm. which pre-exists Jesus.
I understand.
See, the truth is that Jesus pre-exists Jesus in the story of the Druids. And he died on a cross as well. And he's the name of the Son. And Christos pre-exists Jesus by 2,000 years. And he died on the cross. And his mother's name was Mary. He was born in a cave. Three wise men came to visit him from the east. He had a Last Supper. He had 12 followers. He was called the Lion of the Tribe of Saki, whereas Jesus was called the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. And they were both called the Beginning and the End, the Alpha and the Omega, the Resurrection. They were both born without sin, and they came to destroy evil. And the story goes on and on, and both were actually executed with two thieves. So what I go after is evidence that I can see. I look up at the sun, I see the cross, I see the only physical evidence of the cross, I see because of the rods and the cones in our retina, the way that people, whether they're in Europe or in the New World or any part of the world, they can see the cross going across the sun. And in archaeology, you can find crosses all over the world. And they come in the form of crosses. They come in the form of swastikas. Now, swastika is called Gamadian by the French. And that is because on the end of each of the forearms, there's a little tick that goes over to the right or left. And during the early Phoenicians, that gamma, the third letter of the Phoenician alphabet, which in about 1100 B.C. turned into the Greek alphabet, that is the third letter in the alphabet. And so three, that is given the number three, because it's the third letter in the alphabet. In the old days, they used to subscribe a meaning and a number for each letter. And the number for gamma was three because it was the third letter. The meaning of gamma was camel. So in the old days, they used to use camels to travel around in much of the ancient world. It was known at that time. And so 3 times 4 is 12. And there are four of these gammas, each worth three each. So 3 times 4 is 12. So it's a symbol of the 12 signs of the zodiac going around the solar cross, which has four equal arms, and that is the meaning of the swastika. And the swastika is found in nearly all the archaeological sites around the world, including the American Indian. Mm-hmm. It's found on the foot of Buddha. It's found all over Europe. It's found in Scotland on the Christian burial sites. Mm-hmm. It's found, you can see hundreds of thousands of swastikas all over India. You can find the swastika travel agent.
I'm aware of that. We got it. We got the point on that one. Now, let me go back to the historical documentation that a man by the name of Jesus of Nazareth was in fact crucified by the Romans. I cannot discount the historical records to support that, including the writings of the Gnostics. I can accept everything you're saying.
You know,
it all fits. Why can't it all be there?
It should. They've had 2,000 years to work on it. You know, the fact is that Jesus of Nazareth wasn't even an incorporated town until 200 AD, after death.
Well, was it a village before then?
Pardon me?
Was it just a little village?
It was nothing before then.
We know this for a fact.
If you're willing to study it deep enough, say, for instance, another story that's interesting is the crossing of the Red Sea. This is all myth. So if you go to the Tanakh, which is the Old Testament, there was just a new release about 10 years ago of the Tanakh, and And it was a tremendous league of Jewish scholars went through all of the Old Testament works. They went through the original manuscripts as far back as they could. And they found that the Red Sea, the crossing of the Red Sea, was actually the crossing of the Sea of Reeds. And in those ancient times,
the Sinai Peninsula
was covered with marshes and lots of reeds. So, you know, we see Charlton Heston parting the sea, the Red Sea, and all this water flying back, which might do good if you were watching some children's tale, like Santa Claus.
So it's a sea of reeds. I can accept that. That's understandable.
Was known before this by numbers of people. So basically these stories get switched around and they get rewritten. The difference between language and English alone in the last 60 years, just think of all the new words that have come into English in the last 60 words. We have trouble understanding people in movies, you know, 60 years past.
Right.
Well, imagine that in a different language.
Yeah, no, your points are all understandable. I understand it. What about Krishna? Now, there are some who suggest, I'm getting some email on this, that he was not crucified. There is no Vedic document that records such an end.
Well, you know, if you want to get into particularities, I'm afraid you'll have to do the research. And that you know, that's just as much of a an escape from, you know, particulars as it is to say that he wasn't. But I have the materials to show that not only Krishna was crucified, but many others were as well.
Was this cross crucifixion?
Share that parallel story. There's another book called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors.
I know that book. I haven't read it, but I know of it. Are we saying that the cross was used to issue capital punishment back?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it came in, and there's many different crosses. I have over 400 renditions of the cross. There's a solar cross, which I consider really the purest of them, because when you look up at the sun on a dry day, which where many of the people lived in the ancient world, is in a dry climate, they have four equal arms. And there's the Latin cross. There's also the Ta, which looks like a big capital T. Mm-hmm. And that is also an ancient cross that was used for...
Okay, coming up on a break now, I'll take a pause here and come back... Pretty tough for folks listening to discount the Roman records, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Gnostic writings and everything. Be right back and continue with Joseph Gill here. Your calls welcome right after the top of the hour, and I think we'll have a few. Welcome back. We are talking with Joseph Gill, live from Hawaii, about things eclectic and getting lots of email here. One email said, hello, your guest view is, in fact, politically correct. In today's day, you can believe in anything but the Word of God and Jesus. So there's a turnaround. Also, if what you're proposing here is true, the cottage industry of the Antichrist is out of business.
Well, you know, in order to keep something going, you've got to have a boogeyman. You know, the United States. We used to have Russia
Soviet
as a
Union,
boogeyman,
yes,
and now we've got terrorism as a boogeyman.
I understand.
So they've got to have an opposite side. We live in a world of polarity. But you know, speaking of Mary is, you know, the supposed mother of Jesus, and Mary, if you look on any old map or a European map of the world, you'll see that they're not called oceans, but they're called mar. If you look on the map of the moon, you'll see that the big flat areas are called mar, and that is from the word water, mem, which is Hebrew for water. And so out of Mary comes Jesus and lights up the whole sky.
The cave is symbolic
of her womb. And when you see the sun setting or rising over water, you'll see a stream of rays coming across the water to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Jesus walking on the water.
Well,
now, you know, I'm not a member of any religious organization, non-religious organization. I'm not a member of the Freemasons. I don't have a book to sell. This is what I've learned over many years of research through books that are very hard to get a hold of until recently. And this is what I'm offering your audience, free of charge, without any expectations of anything, you know, for myself. And that's what I've learned. Basically, you look at nature and you see how it reproduces itself in our culture, in our daily lives. There's a lot more to it than just religion. Say, for instance, if you look at the layout of the church, just imagine yourself laying down on your back with your arms out, with your legs together. And so your legs represent the pews of the church. Your lungs represent where the choir sits in the church. The choir used to sit in the front of the church. And the heart is where the priest gives his weekly message. And the head of the church, the altar, always faces east in any major religious organization. Whether it's Christian or Hindu or whatever, the altar always faces east because that's the direction that the sun rises. And without the sun rising, we'll all starve to death. So we worship the sun. We personified it to give us our own glory and to make a monopolistic organization that could control people.
How would a Muslim fundamentalists accept what you're saying tonight?
Well, I tell you that I've spent a lot of time traveling around the world, and I've spent a lot of time talking to Muslim fundamentalists and Christian fundamentalists, and they're very interested in listening because I don't have an axe to grind. I really don't have anything personal. I'm just out to share what I've learned.
Would your scholarly research also discount the existence of Muhammad?
I think that that all the religions are organized in the same manner with the same story, but the actors are changed.
Mm-hmm.
There are some differences in the story, but 90% of the story is the same. Say, for instance, if you look at the Muslim, the symbol of the crescent and the star. When the Templars went to fight in the Crusades, it's my opinion that they became Muslims. And they worshipped Baphomet, which is another name for Lucifer, which is represented by the planet Venus, which is called the Lightbringer, or the morning star. And when you look up at the crescent star, or the crescent moon, rather, you see Venus rising above it. And that's what you see in all mosques. And so the Templars came back as Muslims, and they threatened the church. And in the year about 1106, the Pope got together with the King of France and executed Jacques de Molay and all of his followers. And at that point, they went underground, and they became the pirates of the world. They, you know, they fly the Skull and Bones, like the Skull and Bones Society there in Yale.
Mm-hmm.
And they also went up to northern Scotland, where they got refuge by Eric the Red, I think his name was. But it's all in history. And incidentally, he was executed on Friday the 13th, Jacques de Molay, the head of the Templars, who were the original bankers of Europe in that period.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that had the money. And the church, who wanted to control the money, felt threatened. And so they wanted to get, and then the King of France, he felt threatened too, because all the money wasn't going into their coffers. It was going into the coffers of the Templars. Basically, the people who went to fight in the Crusades were the rich folks.
Right.
Because all the rest of them had to stay home in their feudalistic civilization, basically taking care of the Lord. The Lord of the Manor.
Not exactly something you'd see rich people doing.
Old name for phallus.
Here.
Huh?
I say, not exactly something, a pursuit that rich folks would endeavor to become engaged in today, a crusade. They'd send the poor people
off. No, they'd send their children off to war.
That's right, that's right. And the poor and underprivileged.
The oil companies, but...
Interesting turnaround there. Listen, we're going to get to phone calls in just a few minutes here, but there is no reason for me to assume that Jesus Christ didn't exist on the basis of historical record, and if, in fact, he did exist, that doesn't discount anything you've said about ancient symbolism. Furthermore, his existence would give rise to even more opportunity for the people that came after him to corrupt, change, and manipulate his life and death for the benefit of their own power games, correct?
Well, you know, I'm sorry. I just can't agree with you.
We can agree to disagree. That's fine.
In the first place, it's so detailed in so many different lives that were pre-Jesus Christ. In every detail.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe you're missing my point.
And as far as him living, if Jesus Christ did live, which there's no count of that in the Dead Sea Scrolls. There's no account of Jesus Christ living in the Dead Sea Scrolls. There are accounts of Jesus and accounts of Christ. But these were two different sun cults that were brought together, and the Emperor Constantine became the first saint of the Catholic Church, which was the organizer of this new religion. And, you know, this is not something that's going to get me elected into politics by saying this, but it is the truth, and maybe there will be a few people out there that will take the time to realize that they've got 7 days in a week, 5 days they work like slaves, 1 day they get off to mow the lawn and take care of things. And 1 day a week, they've got to go over and give 10% of their income to the church. And so I think it would be worth, you know, maybe a month to sit down and read a few books that would give you another viewpoint.
You're talking about a lost art, reading. Very few people read anymore.
And indeed, if you don't want to read, you can get a wonderful video called The Naked Truth. It's a two-hour video that goes in with illustrations right out of churches, mm-hmm. right out of the original literature. And you can get that by dialing 1-800-955-9960. And it's called The Naked Truth and asks for the two-hour version. It is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through all these different parallels. And it's been told again and again and again. And you've got to remember, people didn't even read until the 1600s. It was only the priests that read. They told us what we needed to know. So we were literally led by those people trying to control us down the whole way. Before that time, when you gave an oath, do you know where the Old Testament and the New Testament, the word testament, comes from?
Go ahead.
It comes from testicles. That's right. And when a man used to give oath on what he was saying, he would take his hand and cup it down over his genitals and say, "I swear to you." He didn't have a Bible to swear on. It didn't cross his heart. That's something that's very new.
How far back does that go?
He cupped over his, and that is when he gives testimony. And that, the Old Testament, mm-hmm. is what a man would swear happened when he covered his family jewels. And the phallus is the measure of a man, and that's the reason why they call the king the ruler. And that's the reason why when you go back to Washington, D.C., you see the largest symbol of the United States is the largest phallus in the world,
yeah.
And that's from the father of our country, and it's called Washington's Monument.
Yep, I've heard
Washington's
this, yeah.
Monument reflects on a pool of water in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's symbolic of Mary,
mm-hmm.
Mar, which means water or ocean. And across the street from that is called the White House. And in there is an Oval Office. And where all the greatest laws are passed, all the most creative laws are passed, they're all passed in the Oval Office.
Well, they're certainly signed right there.
That's it. It's all creativity.
All right. As we continue tonight with Joseph Gill, your calls, welcome, 1-888 on radio. And lots of symbols, as we said at the top of the hour, in our lives. We never notice most of them, but certainly interesting to hear about all this. We'll be right back with more after the top of the hour break here. And don't forget the website. A lot of new material up there today for you at sightings.com. 2.6 million hits and growing all the time. Thanks to you. Be right back.